Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. All right, guys, how are you? This is Ishai Breslauer with the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. And today, we're going to discuss commercial real estate and prop tech, property technology. And we have one of the leaders in the market together with me, a good friend and a person that has a lot to say on the matter and on real estate, a New York man. And he was the CEO of Property Shark and one of the pivot people who basically brought prop tech when he was not prop tech yet. And Bill, thank you so much for being with us. Bill Staniford. And thank you so much for your time and for being with us today. How are you?
Hey, Ishai. Good, Ishai. Great to be here. Glad you're doing well, surviving COVID, and happy to be here.
It's awesome. You look better than you did. So it's a great thing.
I've been hanging out in Lawrence, Long Island, living a good life, staying healthy. I got married. My wife has a baby on the way.
Wow.
Couldn't be happier.
So first of all, congratulations, all good news, and stay healthy, stay well, and kudos, great. Lawrence, I love Lawrence, it's a great place. Let's dive in for a second. You know, before we start everything that we want to talk about, let's start just by saying where you are today and what you handle today, just in a brief way, and then we'll start digging into your story and et cetera.
Yeah, so right now I'm currently serving as the CEO of a company called Rentigo, and we're in the process of going through a merger with another company called Hello Rented, and the new company is going to be called Kira. This is the first public announcement of that, so that's news, and we should be able to complete the merger, I'm thinking, within the next 60 to 90 days. So that's been taking up the majority of my time.
And that's amazing. These are amazing news. Also, especially today, to know that prop tech is really moving forward. We're going to touch that. We're going to talk a lot about it, especially what was the role of prop tech during COVID, which was tremendous, by the way. But first, Bill Staniford has an incredible story. I heard it. Tell us your story.
Yeah, listen, I mean, it's been a fun life, I have to say. So I'm a born and raised New Yorker, former United States Marine Corps cryptologist and code breaker. I grew up in Manhattan and went to two boarding schools. I got kicked out of both of them, never graduated from high school, got a GED. Yeah, listen, I was wild, And like I said, never graduated from high school, got a GED. Got kicked out of my house. I failed out of my first college, which was the New School of Social Research down in Manhattan. I failed out with a 0.8 GPA, left with no options. I ended up joining the Marine Corps. They gave me a couple of tests and I ended up in intelligence. They gave me a strong dose of discipline, I would say. And that was a life-changing experience for myself. And I ended up coming out of the Marine Corps, going to the University of Texas, graduating with a degree in psychology, going to the University of Colorado, completing my MBA, and began my career as a serial entrepreneur. One of the first companies out of the gate was Property Shark. I was the fifth hire, joined as the vice president of sales. That company was created by Matthew Haynes, which is, a true visionary in the space. And so I became the CEO. Then 3 years later, we scaled the company out nationwide, sold it to Yardi Systems. That was a great exit. A lot of fun there.
Great one.
Yep. And, I've been the CEO of another company called Urbint, which stands for Urban Intelligence, which was a second generation data aggregation platform that, did a pretty sophisticated machine learning artificial intelligence project with Con Edison to help them identify specific properties in New York City that were susceptible to gas explosions. So that was amazing. And that's like, really, how do you use prop tech in the real life to make real change? And that was a great example of that. Unfortunately, that company was repositioned out of prop tech and to a company that just services the utility space. It was at that time where I separated, became an advisor for that company, became a mentor of Metaprop, went on to become the chief strategy officer of a company called Envelope, which digitized New York City's zoning resolution. Again, another fascinating project, you know, taking 4,000 pages of legal documents, turning that into if-then statements. That was incredible. And, you know, I'm currently serving as the co-chair of entrepreneurship and innovation at the Queens Chamber of Commerce. That's a great outfit there, headed up by an excellent, excellent individual, Tom Greck. Can't say enough great things about him. And, you know, I've been with Rentigo for just over a year now. And we've been, you know, working hard on that company. Like I said, we're going through a merger right now, highly competitive space. But, you know, around 3 years ago, I began to create a hypothesis that there was going to be a convergence between prop tech and fintech. And so, you know, I was interested in finding a situation for myself that's really sat at the intersection of prop tech and fintech. And it looks like Rentigo, Kira, which is going to become, is really going to fit that mold. So it's super exciting. And, you know, there's even the possibility that we're going to be doing an IPO out of Israel in the beginning of Q3 of this year.
First of all, it sounds really exciting. And there's so much experience that you have in that field. I want to go back for a second before we start digging into the prop tech scene. I want to go back for a second to your Marine experience. And sure. What is the biggest takeaway from that experience that it actually influenced your career, yourself, your personality, as everything as an entrepreneur? What was it?
Well, it's actually an amazing story of personal development, because I pretty much knew nothing but failure up to that point. Wow. And, you know, I was raised in an affluent setting, and I disregarded. I completely threw it away. I was not interested in participating in society, and I was pretty much anti everything. But when I really was faced with no options, and I mean that, I literally had no options. I had a GED and I was a college dropout with no skill set. I was working at the Palladium of New York City as a bar back. And it was unbelievable. And the late 80s, the go-go 80s was incredible time period. So much fun. I've got huge stories there. But ultimately, when I went to Paris Island, and, you know, they shaved my head and I really had to start from scratch. They tear you down and build you up. And by the time I got out of Paris Island, I had a level of confidence which I never had before. And to this day, it stays with me where I believe I can overcome basically anything. And there's no challenge that's too hard. And no situation that I look at that's look at as a problem. Everything is just a challenge for me. And, you know, it's the no quit mentality, which it takes as an entrepreneur, right? No matter how down the chips are, you got to get up, you got to keep going, and you can't affect the people around you. As a leader, you have to make sure that you show up to work, you have an even keel, and you do your job. And you have to be the rock, no matter how bad things get. And everything that I've done in the Marine Corps, I believe it's the greatest experience of my life, and certainly the thing that I'm most proud of.
Tell me something. Is there any particular story that really was a big shift? Meaning that was an in general kind of thing. Is there any particular incident?
I think I may have told you this. I mean, you know, so there was this time where I was coming off the rifle range, and it was horrifying. I scored battalion high, and my uncle, who was also a Marine, told me that, you know, the best way to get through boot camp is to never be first, never be last, don't stand out, you know, put your head down, grind it out. But I had a great time on the rifle range, and I never shot a rifle before I was in the Marine Corps, and I shot battalion high, and I came off the rifle range, and my drill instructor just let me have it, And, you know, he was yelling and yelling, cursing at me to no end, asking me if I had a big head. And ultimately, he ended up spitting all over my rifle and my arms with a big spit of tobacco chew. And I will tell you, my reaction was amazing. My reaction was exhilaration. My reaction was happiness that my drill instructor had just spat on me. And the reason is because I knew that my drill instructor knew that I could take it, that I wasn't going to flinch, and that I had become a Marine. And it was towards the end. And it was one of those things where you would think you'd get grossed out or you'd be offended. And I think one of the problems in society is people get offended too easily, right? So it was really sort of a cataclysmic change in my mind that my personality had morphed. And, you know, it stuck with me.
That is a great story. Hey guys, before we continue, I would like to introduce you to the 7-day CRE challenge, which will introduce you to commercial real estate and will show you that anyone can do this. Also, I have the free cheat sheet for commercial real estate with the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. You can download it free. Just click below or above, wherever it is, and get it. Let's continue. Tell me something. So basically, I want to go back for a second to the evolution of PropTech. When did you, because nobody called it PropTech back then, as we call it.
That's right.
When you were Property Shark. When was the first, you think, I know it was an evolution, but when was the first time that you have said to yourself, there's something going on here and I want to be a big, major part of it?
Well, listen, I mean, I have to tell you, it was instantaneous. And, you know, I joined Property Shark as the VP of sales. I actually just left Kaplan. I was the director of Kaplan Test Prep, which I ran the largest ESL, English as a Second Language school in Manhattan. I ran, you know, it was a fairly significant operation. I increased top line revenue 50% in 1 year, and they offered me a 3% raise. And I said, well, you know, maybe it's time for me to look at some other option. And so that was my 1 year working for Kaplan in corporate America. And I have yet to work in corporate. I haven't since worked in corporate America. But I literally, once I joined Property Shark, I think the first week that I was there, they had organized an event in a small bar in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, which is where our headquarters was. And this was sort of my baptism into PropTech. And I think it was one of the first events, if not the first event, that Property Shark had. And it was a tiny bar on Bedford. And it was unbelievable. I mean, it was standing room only. You could not get in the bar. It was so packed. There was overflow of people outside. And there were people so excited to talk about real estate data. It was unbelievable. And I said, wow, we are sitting on something amazing here. And we were, at that time, we were selling water in a desert. There was nothing like us. And, you know, to that point, when you were doing due diligence on a property, it would take you upwards of a week to gather the information necessary to make a decision. And we were taking that and compressing it into 30 minutes. So what used to take you a week now took you 30 minutes to get the information that you needed. And it was explosive. So, you know, I was able to triple revenue, quadruple traffic within a year of coming on board. And I have to say, I mean, I got lucky. I was brought in right place, right time. Sure, I did some things that were in retrospect were smart, but really it was Matthew Haynes that was the true visionary. And I was the executor. I actually took his idea, translated to the population, and was able to deliver it to the masses.
So, okay, all that happens. And now PropTech becomes a thing. Before we start diving into the discussion about PropTech, if you could, you know, elaborate a little bit for everybody who knows and some people who don't know. prop tech is a big word for a lot of things. You have AI, big data, you have construction tech, et cetera, fintech that is involved. A lot of stuff. It's like one big, I would call it, in Yiddish, we say chalent. It's like this big stew, you know, with a lot of meat and beans and all kind of things in it. And could you just give us a little bit of an overview on prop tech, where it is? We'll talk about a lot of things that happened pre-COVID and then post-COVID. But right now, I just want to go to have an overview. If you could give us an overview on this whole arena, this whole industry that is called PropTech, the types of technologies.
So I mean, that's a big question. And let me say that the entire PropTech space is obviously driven by the real estate industry. And when I'm advising prop tech companies, I make clear that that's the first thing that comes out of my mouth. And, you know, one of the most important things for a prop tech entity is humility. And listen, I cannot overstress this enough. Humility is critical. And what I mean by that is that people who have been operating in real estate have been operating and making a lot of money for a very long time. And so when you're introducing a new piece of technology to them, you have to understand that you're only incrementally increasing their potential to make money. It's not a game-changing situation. I think the biggest game to... Yeah, no, it's really true.
We experienced it firsthand, of course.
Yeah, and you know, it's a lot. There's a lot of young technologists that come and they think they're going to change the world like they did in fintech, and I can explain why that's not the case. And there's actually a really critical elements to why fintech is different from proptech. But I would say the biggest change in the proptech space is in the data side. And, you know, of course, that sounds self-serving because I came from the data side. But the reality is that there didn't used to be the transparency that there is now. And this type of transparency is incredibly important to bring more people to the table to participate in the real estate industry at large and to democratize what we're doing here. So there's people can actually see what's happening. But you know, everything in every aspect. I think that the prop tech industry in general, and we can go through vertical by vertical if you like, but I really still think it's in the early stages of the game. And I still think that the technologies that are out there have not been adopted for the most part in mass. I still think that, you know, especially just talking about processing rental payments, right? I mean, the majority of rental payments are still processed with money orders in cash. And that's just reality. And so it's interesting, but I also think that, you know, we're 10 years from now, 20 years from now, there's going to be no money orders and no cash, and none of that's going to happen. So you're going to look at really big changes moving forward. Everything leads back to data to me. Everything comes back to data and what you can, because without the data, it's hard to create the product feedback loop, which is you have to learn from whatever system that you're building so that you can constantly improve your product offering.
It's true, because the data is the backbone of everything. Because
it's the backbone of everything.
Exactly. Whoever controls the data, whoever will have a service, a product or a service that will be involved around the idea of data, that will resolve a lot of the other ones. And the other ones cannot exist without that, without having that data. They cannot exist. They don't have a right to come out and exist because they don't know enough. And
that's right.
So
and one of the biggest problems also, and again, so this goes to the main differences between PropTech and FinTech is actually the accuracy of the data. And so that right there, if there's one thing that everybody takes away from this episode, is that the main difference is in accuracy of the data. The accuracy, or I should say the inaccuracy of real estate data, right, is primarily the element that's holding back the industry from moving forward.
Right. And that's why you have all kind of companies. We had the LD Salmonson actually in another show. And so we know what it is. It's crazy. I wanted, you know what,
from well, before you leave. So I'll just shout out to LD. Ahead. I mean, you know, Terry and LD, they're the gold standard in the real estate data space.
100%.
I think they're the top, and you know, he's a brilliant guy, also intelligence, military. You know, he's a great guy, great organization, and certainly leading the data charge on the real estate side.
100% agreed. Let's take an example for the fun, for the heck of it. If you could give us an example where a data-driven platform comes out and brings out the messed up data system that is in the real estate industry and can bring us light and to bring us to a better future, as we call it. Let's take a live example. And you know many, I know. So you could choose one technology. Because I know people are listening, they're saying, okay, that's all big words. Let's take an example. Give me an example, you know, of what's happening, of how this data is really affecting the mess. So let's take the mess, describe some mess. I have a few ideas, but I want to hear yours. Let's take a few items of mess and then bring out the technology, which is solving that problem for the future to come or even today.
So let me ask you a question. So yes. Do you want me to explain a mess that hasn't been fixed, that remains to be a mess, or do you want me to explain a mess where we're actually making progress?
Okay, so let's start with the one that we're making progress, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Let's go.
No problem. So I think one of the areas that we are making progress, and again, I'll give a shout out to Cherry. I don't think they've actually solved it. This would be an interesting conversation to have with LD, because he might think he solved it, but I could tell him why he actually hasn't quite solved it yet, but he's well on the way to solving it. And the biggest issue here is the unique identifier. And most people probably, you know, and a lot of people I know, like when they talk to me, they're like, oh God, he's going to talk about the unique identifier again. And the fact of the matter is, the unique identifier is one of the biggest problems that we have right now in the real estate space, which I know LD's made great progress and he has a very good unique identifier. I'm not going to say that it's perfect and he certainly hasn't solved it, but let's just talk about that and what it is. So there are lots of unique identifiers, right? And the most common unique identifier that's known out there is called the address. And so, you know, when people talk about an address,
right,
which is how humans conceptualize real estate, they believe they're talking about one specific thing. If I said to you, you know, 500 6th Avenue, you would think, like, at least in my brain, I'm talking about one specific entity. However, everybody knows that's not true. How many 500 Fifth Avenues are there in this country? I don't know. But, you know, there's many different problems associated with how that address is aggregated in databases. Even if you just talk about the very simplistic one, is that 500, is it 500? Is it Fifth Avenue 5TH? Or is it FIFTH, right? And so, you know, you're thinking, well, that's very nuanced, but the fact of the matter is there are databases out there that are holding data sets and interesting data pieces that are using different forms of that address. And the issue that we're talking about now is what's called address resolution. And anybody working in real estate data understands that address resolution is the first step to working on the unique identifier. And so because obviously there's multiple different ways of actually aggregating data sets by address, first of all, just at a base level, addresses are a terrible way of structuring data, obviously. And it's very hard to get the correct information on a specific building. So let's move forward, right? Let's just understand that, because I could spend hours on this. And then the next step is the best unique identifier out there is what's called a tax ID, right? And this is because it's important, right? I mean, that's how the government taxes you. And so you would think that the government knows what they're doing, which of course they don't. But the tax identifier is a good one, right? It's an important one that you need to be aware of. The problem is, well, let's just talk about New York City, because every municipality is different. Every township is different. In New York City, the tax ID is what's called a BBL, or a block and lot number, right? And so the BBL could potentially be for a building. It could potentially be for a condominium unit, but it's not going to be there for an apartment unit, and it's not going to be there for a co-op unit. So in order to actually have a unique identifier for a co-op, you need to create it yourself. And so on and on down the rabbit hole we go. I mean, this is, it's huge, it's massive, it's insane. And, you know, LD, and you could get him on, and he could do an entire 3-hour show just talking about his solution of the unique identifier, right, and how he's conceptualizing it. But this is an area where technology, and again, if the goal, which I think it is, right? I think it is. If the goal is to create the stock market of real estate where we can trade properties in an email, you're going to need one of these things. And it's going to be tough, because people understand that if you can actually create the unique identifier, then you're in control.
So first of all, we spoke about this with LD, and it was a very interesting conversation. And you say, you pointing out things that are basically very, very similar. So let me right now take you on what you said, what is not resolved at this point, you know, where we are right now. And there are so many technologies that are trying to resolve all the problems that there are. Let's go to an example where things are not yet there at all, but there are already technologies that are evolving.
Yeah, listen, I mean, there are technologies that are evolving, but we have such a long way to go that it's going to be crazy. And so one of the areas that I'm most fascinated about is lot area, right? Now, and again, I'm going to use this one data point, right? And I'm going to say this is the main differentiator between PropTech and FinTech is lot area, okay? So when you're talking about, if you're talking about the FinTech space and you say, if somebody asks me, like, what is the most important number in FinTech? I would say it is top line revenue, right? Because from top line revenue, if you have that number, you can then flow through everything and, you know, you can create your EBITDA and all of the different financial models based off of top line revenue. And without top line revenue, if it's zero, you don't have anything to talk about, so it doesn't even exist, right? So like top line revenue to me in the financial space is the most important data point, period, which everything else flows off of. That's, you know, my opinion. And the one thing that is interesting about top line revenue is that there is actually truth. Okay. There is you can see a CPA can come and say, okay, you know, top line revenue is this number and now it's been certified. And this is actual truth of top line revenue. Okay, so then once you build all your financial models off, it's all based off of a concrete platform of truth. And therefore, you can build, and first of all, computers, they love numbers, and they can build all sorts of fancy algorithms on top of it, and off you go and running. And FinTech has exploded with different technologies and derivatives, and you name it. It's awesome, right? I mean, and then you're looking at what happened to real estate. Okay, well, real estate, if somebody asks me the most important data point in real estate, I would say lot area. And so, you know, once you get past location, 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 which is not a data point, but if you get past location, 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 then once you've identified the location, what is the lot area? Okay, so now is the question. So in New York City, we have widely considered to be the best place for data in the world. And we have two different data sets for lot area. One is from the Department of Buildings, the other is from the Department of Finance, and they're going to tell you what the lot area is of any given property in New York City. And you know what? These two data sets never agree, right? Or they basically never agree, almost never. If not, I mean, like, the majority of the time, they don't agree. And I can tell you the Department of Finance is probably a little bit more accurate than the Department of Buildings, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't matter because there's actually no truth. So now let's say, well, how do you get to lot area? Well, okay. So right now, what you like, let's say you and I are going to transfer, we're going to trade a building. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to agree upon a surveyor to survey the lot, which is then going to go into the legal contract so that we can actually understand what we're trading and we can trade the property, right? Okay, well, the problem is that this is human, right? So if we went out and hired 10 different surveyors to survey the lot, we'd get 10 different answers
right.
on what the area is. And again, like, so the lot area, it derives everything because that affects the FAR, what you can build, right? So, and then taxes flow off of that. So now you're building all this technology on sand. You can't do it because the further away you go from that incorrect or non-truthful data point, which is the foundation, the more inaccurate your data gets. And so, like, if somebody tells me that they know the square footage of a condominium because there's a data set in New York City's real estate databases that tell you what no, you can't. And so what are you going to do? You're going to spend a lot of money building technology on derivatives that are based on incorrect data? No, you're not. You're just not going to do it because nobody's going to buy that data because they know it's wrong.
But I'll tell you something. There are companies, you know, you could actually raise a question on that because the human factor maybe will give you 10 different answers, like you said. But you could have someone say, you know, it's 10 different answers, but within such a small difference, it could be inches, right? And that would not affect majorly the FAR. You could have that answer.
Well, let me throw something else in there.
Okay.
Let me throw politics.
Oh, policy is a big thing.
Politics.
Politics. Okay, go ahead.
Right. You know, okay, because it just so happens that my cousin is the former speaker of the City Council of New York, right? And, you know, he works in spot rezoning. And, you know, if he determines that, you know, something needs to be different from what it is, he can probably make it happen. So, you know, I would say that, so your political connections are probably more important than actually understanding the lottery.
I agree with that. That is true.
And again, like this skews things. This is one of the problems because now you're talking about an unequal playing field. Right. And you know, opacity is the driver of profit. And, you know, people, the really creative operators, you know who they are. Like the really creative operators, the ones that actually establish neighborhoods and drive change in places that can visualize the future that doesn't exist. They're the ones that actually make the biggest amount of profit. And so, you know, it's unlike fintech. You know, the technology, we can go into the technology of property management, construction tech, which again, you know, you're nibbling around the corners there. You're making an incrementally more profitable, and there it could be, you know, very significant dollars in construction tech and property management, but it's nothing compared to the data that drives the actual underlying asset and the politics which drives everything. I mean, I'll tell you right now, we have had massive cuts in valuations of property because of politics.
That's true.
It's just reality. The politics is more important. And I mean, I was at an event in upstate New York a couple of years back, and John Gilbert was speaking. And by the way, everyone should know who John Gilbert is. I'm assuming most people do. And if they don't, they better look him up. I mean, he's the actual grandfather of prop tech. Okay. He is the guy that started this whole thing. And, you know, he was talking about, you know, politics. That's what he was talking about. That's what he said was most impactful. And I listened to that.
That is amazing. Tell me something. I want to shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about construction tech a little bit. How is that going to affect construction companies and the whole GCCM, you know, hierarchy, as well as the actual construction, you know, scene that we have out there?
Yeah. So let me start off by putting a big caveat here. I am not a contractor. I have never built a building. There's plenty of nuances that I'm not familiar with. But again, I will actually hearken back to politics here as the biggest impediment to construction. Again, you know, there's the scaffolding law, which if everybody doesn't understand the scaffolding law, they better. And if they're going to build something. And, you know, I think that, you know, there's a couple of interesting companies out there that I really like in construction tech that are dealing with AI and actually operational safety, where you can, you know, what I really want to see is machines to be able to tell when humans are committing an infraction, a safety infraction on a site, and we start to get some of the litigation off the backs of the contractors so we can actually start building again. I mean, because, you know, if you have this massive litigation where it really becomes cost prohibitive to have insurances, whether you can get insurance on a building or not to do a construction site, it's crazy. And so what is your technology going to do, except in my opinion, if you really want to cut down on the cost to make it actually more cost effective, then you can really use technology. I believe this is going to happen, where you can stop infractions almost before they start. Like, you know, I want to see artificial intelligence be able to identify whether some construction worker that comes on a site is under the influence of alcohol, right? Just by the way they move. And then it flags to something so that you can almost ensure that they're, because anytime anybody gets injured on the site, even if it's their fault, it's going to impact, you know, the builder. And this is the type of thing that is really hurting our industry.
And you know what? I've seen a bunch of construction tech companies, and some of them were not in the ballpark, and some were extremely impressive. And you know, you never know, because you need always the GC or the engineer at the table to tell you, as you said, you know, you're not in there. You're not, that's not your field. We need that person in that field, who is coming from there. And that is a shout out to everyone. Just like you said, humility is most important. It's a shout out to all those who are coming out with all those brilliant ideas. And they're all brilliant ideas, but you don't know if they're brilliant until you actually see them getting accepted or implemented into the properties or into the companies that are willing to actually take them, right? And that is a major problem. Can you talk a little bit about that, the older generation versus the younger generations? Because a few years ago, we saw that older generation, and they said, listen, don't talk to me about this tech. I don't know anything about tech. I'm an old school real estate company. We make money. We're doing it right. Everything is cool. Them versus the this evolving market of prop tech. And then the kids are taking over and they are more in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and they are in tech. They understand that value of tech. They understand that the world is changing. Can you talk about this a little bit?
Yeah. So let me start off by making a very big, broad blanket statement. Okay. Every single company that exists right now better be a tech company or it's going away, period. Right. And I don't care what industry you're in. If you're not using technology, you're on your way out, and that's fine. And as far as talking about the, you know, the young guns versus the old hat. So look, I am in no place to talk to any of these people. And the fact of the matter is, if people don't want to change their operation because it works, more power to them. As a technologist, you know, I've learned, I've been in this space for almost 20 years at this point, trying to get people to use technology. And I find that it doesn't help to convince them or try to convince them to use the technology. The only, it's not sales, it's education. And if I can't speak to them, if I can't speak to them in plain English, not some fancy terminology. If I can't speak to somebody in plain English and say, this is how this is actually going to help you, then I'm not even going to bother, right? And I have to believe it too, right? I actually have to believe that this is going to benefit them, even if it's just, it's going to take a headache slightly down, right? It's just going to minimize your headache this much. It's worth it, because incremental efficiencies over the long term is going to make everything amazing. And again, like, I'm so grateful for my opportunity to get into PropTech at the beginning, and to just see how the industry has evolved from the beginning is incredible. And it's awesome to be a part of it.
So we all know that COVID hit, right? We all know what happened. It happened to all of us. We, you know, we got stuck in all kind of places around the US, around the world. And we were unable to do to conduct business the way we used, the way it used to be. But right now, PropTech came into play in a way that actually people who did not see the value of it all of a sudden opened their eyes. And what is your take on it?
I don't know. I think that we are slowly, methodically marching towards greater acceptance of technology in this space. And I don't think COVID really made that much of a difference.
Tell me what you think about that. You know, RXR Realty, which is one of the companies we, you know, look up to when it comes to commercial real estate, the major leaders of New York, major leaders of New York, and also leaders of prop tech, I would say. And, when they came and they wanted to bring back the office market, which is a whole topic of its own, you know, it's a standalone topic. They brought in technologies in order to perform social distancing, in order to be able to bring people and to get them checked, you know, at the door, and to be able for them to have a smooth entrance to the building without touching anything, with elevators that have less buttons, with all kind of systems that did not exist. And technology came into play and helped that happen. Do you agree?
No. And
I love that. I love that. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I mean, so let's just look at the numbers, right? So the fact of the matter is that I believe the latest numbers are only about 20% of people have returned back to the office. And so what does that mean? And obviously the technology, and if you've been in New York City and you've been into a building during COVID, I mean, I think the best technology so far has been the fact that people can take my temperature with a gun. I can just shoot it at my forehead and tell me that I'm 98 degrees, therefore I can enter the building. And that's not prop tech. That's med tech.
Right.
But people, I don't think actually being in the space necessarily is the big problem, right? I think the problem is that nobody wants to get into the subway system, which if you remove the subway system from New York City, you're in trouble, right?
Yeah.
You can't move people around. Now, of course, I'm very New York City centric. But I do believe that New York City is probably one of the highest in other areas of the country. I bet the numbers are much higher of people returning back to the office because they're mostly driving a car independently. And they feel when they go to their office, they don't have to touch any buttons, or they can distance enough, right? Which is how I would feel, right? If I was in Indianapolis and I had a car or some other, second tier city, I would have no problem going to work. And I actually don't really have much problem going to work now, but do I want to get into the subway system? No. Is PropTech fixing that? No. And we got a problem, right? We have a real problem.
Okay, so I'll tell you where I agree with most of what you said, but there's one point that I believe is a little different, because they think that PropTech had something to do with it. And it comes to the property management aspect. Whoever already uses tech, when it comes to property management, the information, the yep. ability to pass the information to the tenants, whether it's residential or office, doesn't make a difference, right? The ability to take that information through the app or through their system or through their data or through their CRM, whatever you call it, okay, was actually utilized by technology, by the PropTech management platform that they already created. So that is maybe the only difference. But I do agree with you that, you know, it will take time for certain cities, you know, to get back, especially New York City. You know, I had already a few discussions on that. And it's the vast majority of the people who are involved in the real estate there, they understand that the office market is not going to come back in a while.
Yeah. So also let me just say, you know, on the multifamily side, which of course I work in, and, you know, we provide a mobile application for residents to pay their rent. And we have seen, like, we are statistically, anyone that's in our system is statistically more likely to have paid their rent than the average in the country, without a question. So, you know, we only saw about a 10% decrease in people paying rent through our app. And the our app is specifically built so that people don't have to have human connection, human contact, right? You're not actually writing a check and handing it to somebody or going into an office. You're paying your rent through your phone.
Right. That's and another way to solve it.
Right. And so to that degree, I mean, we got lucky or we were in the right place, right time. But it's certainly, you know, any of these types of applications that can help you avoid human contact obviously will have benefited or had performed better during COVID, certainly.
Tell me something. Do you have in mind any industry within the real estate that is going to die the fastest? Just like everybody spoke about, you know, when tech is coming, about travel agents or stuff like that, you know, and tech came in with all Expedia and those hotels.com and all these things. So people use less and less travel agents. And my wife is a travel agent, so I understand that. But she has different type of clients, people who really want the service. But I'm saying in the vast majority, the worldwide type of, the market worldwide. So I'm saying in real estate, is there any specific market that got hurt or would get hurt tremendously the fastest because of PropTech?
I think you're talking about verticals. I think that there is, you know, unfortunately, I think that the residential agents and brokers are going to become disrupted, right? They're going to get disrupted. And they, you know, and I know this because obviously
I think residential, is that, do you agree?
Yes.
I don't think commercial that much.
Not yet. Right. So I think certainly the residential agents and broker are the first up. Right. So it's fair warning to everybody out there that's thinking about becoming a residential agent or broker. Most of the companies that are getting funded in the space are companies that are going to VCs and saying, look, I figured out a way to disintermediate the agents. Right. And that's a common methodology for technology to undertake, is to, how do you make the process more efficient, right? It's that easy.
Right, to cut the middleman in, you know, per se.
Yeah, this is creative destruction, right? And this is actually good, right? Because there's, and I'm not, listen, if you're a great agent, you're going to be fine. Because the 80-20 rule is still going to, you know, be in effect, where,
right,
you know, 20% of the top agents,
the top two people in the company are going to make it.
100%. And so, you know, and again, those that adopt technology are probably going to be able to survive better than those that don't adopt technology. I think that's without question. But, you know, to think that that's not coming to the commercial space is wrong. It is. It's just more complicated. And again, there's going to be better agents and, you know, better brokers, better commercial brokers that are going to perform their tasks better. And they're going to become much more as advisors, which they already are, right? So I don't think there's any question that commercial real estate is more complicated and therefore requires, you know, more analytics, analysis, whatever you want to call it, and be able to put things into context. So the vertical is the agents. They're the ones that I think are PropTech is really going to disintermediate within the next, you know, 10, 15 years.
Look, when it comes to commercial real estate, I think that you have to divide it, and you already pretty much did it right now. When it comes to the analysis, right, to analysts, acquisition managers, and all those who are dealing with the numbers. So that is already happening, right? We already have technologies that are trying, we already have companies, real companies that are taking this, you know, the whole, all the data and crunching it down to the pro forma, which used to be done by an analyst. And soon enough, I don't know when it's going to happen. It's already happening, but to what act in terms of the accuracy of that matter, when I want to check a real estate deal in that scope, I will not trust the tech at this point yet. I will look at it. I will examine it, but I will still use the analyst. I'm sure that will change. But
over time, when people gain more trust in the technology.
Absolutely. Exactly. But, and that would change for sure. But when it comes to the advisory level, like you said, I would say, you know, it's so hard to make a deal happen without the broker, a professional broker who will help the deal happen and will be there every step of the way to get the negotiation going. People think it's hard buying a house. Try to buy an $80 million building, you know?
Yeah.
It is sure. The same in a way, but it's not.
Right. So, another area that people need to be on the lookout for, another vertical in the real estate, is on the financing side. And again, this is bleeding into blockchain technology, which I believe is going to revolutionize our lives, period. I think blockchain is here and here to stay, and people that don't know about blockchain better start educating themselves on the technology. And the biggest threat that technology is going to bring is going to be on the finance side.
100%, I agree with that. And blockchain technology is actually coming and coming fast, and that's very interesting.
Oh, it's here. It's here. Trust me, when I say it's here, like, so right now...
So talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Like, right now, I could leave right now with my phone, go to Baskin Robbins, buy myself an ice cream using only cryptocurrencies and no problem, right? And like every day, more and more things are being added where it's going to be everywhere. And, you know, I'm already looking at how I'm going to be integrating cryptocurrencies into rent payments. And, you know, I'd be shocked if a year from now, if we had a conversation that we weren't accepting all cryptocurrencies for rental payments.
So I'll tell you something. So I just want to point out for everyone who's listening that blockchain technology is not only the crypto, as we know, right? It's much, much, much deeper and much wider than that. And we can talk about, like we spoke about before, you know, with the show started, we spoke about tokenization, which is definitely coming. It's already happening, actually. And I don't know how much it will be how much it will do to the market. I don't know. But it's definitely there and it's definitely coming. And another thing is blockchain technology is a definite factor for the security and the transaction of documentations, right, between companies when a transaction is coming into play.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, I look at everything from a data perspective, and that's sort of how that's my point of reference. And so when we, going back to the conversation that we had earlier about the unique identifier, personally, I believe that the unique identifier will be solved, but it will be done on the blockchain. And I mean, again, that's an entirely long conversation, but there are, you know, very many new interesting technologies that are working in the data space. You know, one of the companies that I look at and I track a lot is Chainlink, which is a protocol which enables off-chain data to be connected to the blockchain. And so it is really very interesting stuff. But like I said, I mean, it's already here. It's coming to, you know, if somebody in the audience, somebody listening to this doesn't understand anything about blockchain, it's really time that you started looking into the technology and understanding at least how it works. And really, I mean, I think that one of the big critical points is just to begin, if you can't answer the question of how Bitcoin is different from Ethereum, if you can't answer that question, then you know where to start. So the first thing you need to understand is the difference between those two technologies.
100%. Listen, we need to wrap it up. And I know you have a meeting also coming up soon. And
absolutely.
Listen, I want to thank you for your time. And please tell everybody how they can find, is Rentigo open for service for the companies or not at this point?
Of course.
Also, of course. Tell everybody how to find you guys.
All multifamily at all levels. You know, we go from SFR, single family residential, all the way up to luxury high rise Manhattan. If you can download it for free. One of the things I will say is that we don't charge our partners anything ever. I'm in the business of trying to make property management more profitable, period.
Okay, so I'm telling that to everybody. Guys, you heard this. You understand that Bill Stanford is a real pioneer when it comes to PropTech. And if he is in a company like Rentigo, it's got to be something interesting. You guys will find all the links, whether it's below or above, whatever platform you guys are listening or watching, and check him out. And you can get in touch with them. And you obviously leave me all those links, so everybody can get in touch with you. All right, Bill, thank you so much. We appreciate your time. If you could stick around 1 second, I'll just tell everybody goodbye, guys, and take care. And I'll see you in the next show. You definitely, if you're a beginner and everything was a little bit of a, I would say, techno bubble for you, don't worry about that. If you came to this point, it means that you're interested, you want to learn. You can take, obviously, you can start taking courses. You can start educating yourself. Check out the 7-day CRE challenge that I have. I put the link below or above. And also take out the cheat sheet with the 6 secrets of commercial real estate. You got to check them out. And it's free to download. Check them out and check out all the links for Bill Stanford and Rentigo. I'll see you guys the next time. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.